Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Good day, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode on A to D, Agree to Disagree. Today, we're going to be talking about someone, maybe you know of him, maybe you don't. His name is King Leopold II of Belgium. And we're going to be talking about his atrocities. And just to give you a very brief overview of what we're going to be talking about. In Congo, between the 19th and 20th century, the colony at that time was under the personal rule and private control of this man called Leopold II. The heinous acts committed were associated with labor policies engaged in the collection of natural rubber for export, together with an epidemic, famine, and falling birth rate caused by these disruptions. The atrocities contributed to a sharp decline in the Congolese population. The death toll leading to a population decline over the period is disputed, with modern estimates ranging from 1 million to 50 million. This guy killed between 1 to 50 million. People believe it's even more. So we have a very special guest who has been here before to talk about socialism and capitalism, Louis. So Louis is going to be speaking to us about this, intricately about King Leopold. Louis, once again, you're welcome to A to D.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Happy to be here again.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you again. So, Louis, I just wanted to give us an introduction. Who is this guy? Who was King Leopold II? And why should we be very interested in him?
So, before we even get to King Leopold, I want us to get to the place of everything. First of all, I have always spoken about how Africa has been dealt a bad card. Yeah? From the coven of witches that sat in Europe to divide Africa, to the Duke of a map they used to divide Africa, to Mussolini who rained hell on Ethiopia for close to a year, to King Leopold who had this underground Holocaust going on. So basically, King Leopold came into power in a particular scenario where they were trying to where Belgium was adopting the democratic rule and so on. And then history has it that, okay, he brought about having Belgium also interfere in other equatorial regions, like Spain was doing, like UK was doing, like France was doing. And then history had it that he actually wanted Philippines, but the Spanish queen then would not give him Philippines. So what he did was that they acquired Congo. And instead of it being ruled by, let's say, the Belgian country, it became his own private property. Now, Congo is one of the biggest regions in Africa.
Yeah.
And then imagine one man having that as his private property. First thing we always say is that power is corrupt, and then we discover that one man has that kind of huge land space as his property. In Congo, remember, Congo has one of the largest resources in the whole world. It has gold, it has diamonds, it has ivory, it has everything. And so he came in and then he started ruling, first of all, by implementing the first public, which was his own force. So going and we because that region was actually being controlled by a man named Tip. If you know Tip, Tip was an Arab slave master who was trading slaves. And then in Europe, they were getting to an enlightenment stage where we noticed that they were trying to be hostile towards slavery and the rest. But what did King Leopold do? He sat back in Belgium and made this guy a governor, a provincial governor in the state. And so that he would not interfere in whatever he's doing, and then Leopold himself doesn't interfere. Yeah. So, you know, it played out and played out, and other countries they're crying that no, that why is Tip, who used that power to even grow his slave acquisition even more. And so it was noticed that King Leopold had to establish a set of guys to kick Tip out of Congo. He succeeded, but it was bloody, very bloody, back and forth, but he succeeded. And then we discovered that King Leopold also brought in a lot of governors. Now, the trick he used was that he didn't pay the governors, let's say, like a standard salary that you have. Yeah. What the governor's cuts were based on the amount of resources he brought back to King Leopold. Mm-hmm. Now, when you say, okay, this is a free state, the free state of Congo.
Let me just interrupt you on the place of free state. So, I want people to really understand how deceitful this guy was. In the first place, he figured out that the United States, the UK, Spain, all became world countries by colonizing a particular region in Africa. And the funny thing is, his dad, Leopold I, tried 50 times to colonize other countries. And so when he came into power, he decided to move in on Congo. And when he actually had a conversation with international communities, but they let him go because people who have gone to Congo had very bad diseases, you know, and there were some of them were eaten by lions and tigers. So for them, it was like no go area. But if you want to go, then so be it, right? And now the most deceitful thing about this is he told them he was going to bring Christianity. Mm-hmm. And you see, Lewis, this is one problem I have with, this one problem I have with the whole African history. Religion has played a pivotal role to the most, heinous atrocities we have seen in this country or in this continent. And even we see it till today. So he tells them that, you know what? What's going to happen is we're going to send missionaries. We want to bring Christianity to Congo. We want to bring Christianity it wasn't called DRC then. We want to bring Christianity to Congo. And when he got there, he knew how horrendous his act was. He now named Congo the Free State of Congo. I'm like, so now you saw my reaction when you talked about the First Republic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And just to even reiterate here, when he came about as the the most logical thinker or the most forward thinker in Europe.
Yeah, he was intelligent. I mean, I'll give it to him.
He was pretty much intelligent. And one question I would like to even like really ask then is when I was in school and when we used to learn history of Africa and so on, my spirit will not so agree with most of the things they were teaching because these guys were set up as heroes. For instance, Lord Lugard, which I consider not to be a hero. Yeah. David Livingstone, who was actually employed by King Leopold. David Livingstone and Stanley were employed by King Leopold and they actually surveyed the land and gave this guy information that helped him crack down Congo. So, talking about the First Republic, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I want to just speak on how, because other people may have questions on, how was he able to move into Congo? How was he able to colonize Congo and make it his private actor? So is there a way you can talk about this? I don't know about this Henry Stanley guy, that this famous African explorer who went to Congo and was selling a white man. So can you just speak on that so I understand?
So like I was saying earlier, King Leopold came in at a time where Belgium was turning democratic.
Yeah.
Embracing democracy, he didn't have that much power. And so what he was selling to the Belgian community was that, see, we needed an equatorial state to become more powerful. Yeah. And then and let's even be clearly honest, there's no reports that King Leopold actually even had been to Congo.
No, he didn't. He didn't go to Congo.
He had never had been to Congo. And so what was so after all the whole back and forth, like I said, he wanted Philippines. He didn't get Philippines from Spain, and then he got Congo. He entered with Livingstone and Stanley, who surveyed the land. And so when he brought back everything, I think he started pushing the Free State ideology, whereby let's also note that nothing was being monitored regarding Congo. Congo was not being monitored by anybody. It was just a state. So as he arrived in Congo, if you refused to work for him or you refused to give a certain percentage, what did he do? He cut off your limbs or he killed you. And let's also see that numbers were forced to actually work in the mines in Congo. Now, it was reported that they actually worked till their death.
Yeah.
It means that they go underground and you work till you die. So that was one of the major stuff going on in Congo. People talk about the African elephants becoming extinct.
Yeah, let me people who are on this call, let me just share a picture of like these amputating people's hands and I mean I don't know why I can't share. Oh no, why can't I share? Okay, for some very weird reasons, I can't share my, hold on. Let's just continue, right? So the thing now is, before we even talk about amputating people's hands, I want people here to understand that the First Republic, who were the King Leopold's army, right? They were Congolese people. And they were given ammunition and told them for every single bullet they fire, they should ensure they kill somebody. That is, if you don't meet up with your rubber, the amount of rubber you're supposed to fetch for that day, if you're not able to meet up with it, they should kill you. And the only way... the thing is, the only way King Leopold could... the only way he could account for the amount of people that have been killed and to make sure that the amount of bullets that have been wasted or have been used is equal to the amount of people being killed was to amputate the hands of the person you're killed. Now, it got so bad to the point that villages had to went out civil war, where other villages had to go to another village to kill people, to cut their hands, to just give it to him, to say, oh, okay, these people didn't meet this particular daily cut of, or this cut of rubber. So these are the hands of people who didn't. And I find it very weird that, I may be jumping, but I just want to lay this out because it's very disturbing. Museums and places are being named after this guy, saying that he brought wealth. But I wouldn't want to rush into it. So just so that people get a bit of context to the whole amputating of people's hands. So that's why I just wanted to bring in that analysis.
Story, yeah.
So I want to also ask you a question, which I believe you would answer, but you can also go on with what you want to say. But the question I want to ask is, how were they able to now figure out that, how are people able to figure out this heinous act that King Leopold was committing?
So reports went on that missionaries in the region, foreign missionaries that came in, which were not really Belgian, that came into Congo, then made such reports and reported it to Europe, which sort of, in a way, frowned upon it. Mm. So they frowned, and then he had to draw back and till independence happened. So the story actually got out by like missionaries that came in to preach and so on, which were independent, which were not sent by the states. Because, like, we should also be missionaries, which were independent, came in for a purpose, which was to evangelize. Yeah. Missionaries sent by the states came in for another purpose, which, by the way, they might have come in freely to evangelize, but obviously King Leopold had alternative motives. Yeah. As, like, as a bubble to show how graceful he was. And you made a point earlier concerning people in Belgium celebrating King Leopold, and it happens still today. Now, I just want to, his son actually made a very important statement.
Important
which is
or defamatory?
It's actually fascinating. I find it really fascinating. Whereas I'm just trying to figure out, he said something I need.
So he basically, I think the comment you're trying to find is the comment where he said that how can he accuse his dad of such heinous acts when he never got to Congo?
Yeah, exactly. He was never to go, had been to Congo. And then so between 1885 and 1924, it is important to know that 10 million Congolese died. Now, out of a 20 million population, it was cut by half. Yeah?
Yeah.
Until its independence, and it kept on cutting by half till its independence in 1971.
Sure.
Now, people would argue that it was due to diseases, due to malnutrition, and so on. But let's take a look at the breakdown of everything King Leopold enforced in Congo. It means that when they got into an area, an expanse of land, and they wanted to, and they got cash crops like, cocoa and so on, If they did not have space to store it, guess what they did? They went through a stage called depopulation. Depopulation means they go to a village and burn the entire village. Then build. So depopulation means they go to a village and then they burn the entire village, send people away so that they can build storage facilities for such cash crops that couldn't get storage facilities until it was shipped to Belgium and other places. That's what the population was. And if you are going to the population, if you're going to depopulate a village, if you're going to remove people from their homes, if you're going to amputate people, if you're going to disperse people, if you're going to make people poor, that means is that obviously people are going to catch diseases, people are going to die of. So it's a ripple effect. And then when people say, he killed probably 1 million, it might not be up to, no, I would argue that he was responsible for the 10 million that died from 1885 to 1924, because it's a ripple effect. Once you disrupt a society, everything that comes as a result of that disruption will be your fault. It means if I take people out of a village, and they don't have anywhere to stay, if I amputate people, they might not necessarily die of the amputation, but they would die of infection that would happen to that the hands or whatnot. They would die of it. And so, how did he foster this form of amputation and so on by the first republic, which was his militia, which he used to chase away tip? Now, what he did was, like I said, he organized governors of provinces, And then these governors were not paid, were not given a basic salary. What they were told was that they would be given commission based on how much they were able to bring out of the land per season or per time or per month or per whatever. So it means that if I'm a governor of probably Lagos State, for instance, and I want to become richer than the governor of probably Ibadan or Oyo State, what I have to do is to get my people, and given I own them no responsibility, I don't have any ties to them or whatever, I'm just a governor, they just appointed me, I'm from Europe, I don't know these people, but why should I care about them? I would force them to go to the mines and work till their debts, till they give me some certain amount of whatever gold. If my percentage is 10%, I will make them work and make probably times 10 of the normal income, and therefore I will get more. And then I'll make my first republic enforce that law, which meant that people had to pay for the people had to give for whatever. And let's also be mindful that these were poor people in Congo.
Yeah.
What that means is that definitely they will not be able to meet up at some point or the other, because these governors will keep on upping their quota. They keep on upping it from 100. If I'm the governor, obviously I'm greedy, and I see maybe the Oyo State governor making 200. I'm going to up my quota to 200 and tell you to provide 200 for me. And if you don't do that, I'll amputate your hand. No, and when they were amputating, they were amputating the children and the wives. So it means that the next time I'm coming, obviously, if you cut my capacity down halfway and you want me to up my quota, you're going to come back and cut my capacity again, down again. Because first of all, you amputated my children, you amputated my wives. You're going to work at half capacity, meaning that I will never be able to meet that criteria, whatever you ask me to do.
So when I did, because there's this book, and I think I recommend it for everyone here and anyone who's listening to the podcast. It's called King Leopold's Ghost. When I started reading the book, I had to stop because I was concerned as to why. I studied history in school, in secondary school. I studied a bit of history in university, and I heard about Joseph Stalin. I heard about Hitler, but for some reason, I don't know the reasons, but I didn't know about King Leopold II. Now, Louis, I just want to just add a bit of. I just want to add a bit of my own take on these things, all you have said, and what happened. You see, the biggest problem I see here is the fact that when this man was committing these atrocities, he had a bit of confidence that people would back him up, that the Belgians are
going to.
So at first, if I'm sure you did your study on it, even after they took the asset from him after he died, you see that the Belgian community didn't really. I mean, there was no form of reparation. There was nothing. It was like, let it not be the king's private asset anymore. Let it be a Belgian colony. But they didn't really change anything. Even they came and discovered that that DR Congo did not just only have rubber but had gold, because King Leopold didn't know they had gold. Good. He just knew they had rubber. So when he came in, when they came in, they figured, there was modern rubber here. We have gold, they have silver, they have mineral resources. And the problem is, they had a zoo. Black people. And they told them they were like animals. So they were going in there, and Belgians were going in there to throw bananas and peanuts. And do you know what? That zoo... The kind of image of that zoo is in Belgium. It's in Belgium. There's a museum, a particular museum. I'm trying to remember the name of the museum now. Center of African Museum, something like that, in Belgium. That zoo, they replicated that zoo in Belgium. And when I see this entire thing, and I begin to ask, how is it that even the word Hitler is a hate crime in Germany? Even the point that you can't name your child Hitler in America. But till today, we still have King Leopold's name. Even we had there is a statue of a gold statue of him in Belgium.
In the museum.
When I see these things going on, I begin to wonder, how were we able to tolerate this amount of impunity? And to the point that he himself destroyed evidences. He burned out evidences. So let me just go to the next question, because one thing, when I start talking about this guy, I just begin to somehow, I just go emotional and I get so angry about it.
Before you get to your question here, I want to also note that there is something called the power of plausible deniability. That's what he used. So it means that if I'm going to sit down in Europe, I don't have to go to Africa. Just give me the official reports. Don't give me the unofficial reports. My governors are ruling. They are directly responsible for whatever is happening in Congo. But I mean, we are getting rich here in Belgium. So don't give me whatever is happening, don't give me those underground reports. I just want basic reports of what we are getting, of the numbers we are making and so on. Yeah, the financial. And then I've decided to name this state the Free State of Congo, meaning I respect freedom. I say no to slavery. I've even conquered Tip. I've chased him out of Congo. Therefore, I'm a good man. And that is what Belgians are banking on, that this man was the most graceful king they ever had.
Yeah.
So that's why you see it.
You see, this is one of the reasons why we are going to be having we're having an African forum next
year.
Yeah. So the thing, the biggest problem, and this is on an African scale, on a continental scale, we don't tell our stories. We don't tell our story because at a point they had to start intervening people. I mean, when the British guy figured out that, come on, these guys are making so much rubber, it can't.
Yeah.
I mean, this has to be. There has to be a kind of slavery. There had to be slavery. There had to be kind of labor behind this. So he now started doing his own study, and then definitely what he felt was happening was actually happening. But you see, the problem I have is we do not tell these stories. Even the King of Gold Ghost was written by a white man, and I don't know if we didn't read them by a white man, but we do not tell the stories ourselves. So even till tomorrow, there are people, if you go deep, if you go into DR Congo, there are stories that are not even that known, that happened that are not even that known. And if you see till today, why they call it King Leopold's Ghost is because it still happens till today.
Country. You're coming to that.
Yes.
You're going to come to that.
So please, let's just go into that because, I mean, so to my audience, people who are listening to the podcast and people who are listening live here, I just want to make a particular statement. You will not be able to go down into maybe give you a chronological order of how things happened. They're just going to give you an overview of what happened so you can go and do your own studies. But the whole point is we're going to highlight important things. So you may be having a lot of information coming to your way at the same time. We're not here to just talk about history and then let go. We're here to talk about the implications it has to the continent and how we can resolve these issues as we are going forward.
Definitely.
Yeah, so take your time, read the book, King Leopold II and King Leopold's Ghost, or you can go on YouTube there's a video on it. You can go and do a more intensive study. The whole point is for you to know that such atrocities exist, and yet all we know about is Hitler. Like a man, when they asked a man to describe who King Leopold II was, he said, and I quote, "King Leopold II is the man who makes Hitler look like an altar boy." It was that bad. So let's dive deep into the further atrocities, if you want to us talk about that, and how he was able to hide this heinous act, and then going forward with the whole why Africans can't write their own history.
So like I explained earlier, we could see that King Leopold played plus within deniability in Belgium. Even down towards our own era, where his descendants are saying, look, he was not responsible. In fact, he had never been to Congo. So why are we blaming King Leopold, who was the most graceful individual, who was the most forward thinker, who took Belgium from where it was to another level? Why are we blaming him for atrocities that never occurred? And so, like, if you notice in the beginning of on my entry statement, I made a statement, and I think that statement, I will continue ringing it. Yeah, the statement is Africa has been dealt the worst card ever. So, like I said earlier, if you listen to what I said, from the coven of witches who divided Africa, in Europe through a terracotta joke of a map. The map was not proper, and they just used lines and divided Africa. They didn't think of the culture, they didn't think of the tradition, they didn't think of the religion, they divided Africa. Nothing. They just divided based on their own selfish needs. So Mussolini, who bombarded the Ethiopia till their kingdom came and Ethiopia collapsed, to King Leopold and what he did to Congo. and other dictators. And people would like, we like to focus on the external factors of Africa. But sometimes I also like to focus on Africans themselves, yeah, who would necessarily not like to tell their story. Because I'm wondering why, number one, like I said earlier, Lord Lugard would be considered a hero. He was never a hero of Nigeria. Why David Livingstone would be considered a hero or who discovered Congo? No, David Livingstone went there because King Leopold had an ulterior motive or something. And these guys need, like, if you're going to tell history in school, which I don't believe is being told in school, because I don't think we even did extensive history in school. Most of what I knew, I either read or came across one way or the other, is that the teachers there, they want you to think one way. This is the history of Africa. This is the curriculum that the Europeans gave us, and this is the history we are going to tell. We are not going to tell our own story. So if we are going to move from the stage, because like you said, we are still going to come to the implications and how it affected Congo, or how it affected Africa generally.
And how the same thing going on.
Yeah.
The same thing we're talking
about. How it's going on.
It's still going on.
How it's going on. Yeah. And how it's going on. And we will never be able to reconcile this if in schools or wherever we do not face up to these issues or these parent issues.
Let me just buttress your point when you talk about how we can handle this internally. And one of the things that when I read about colonization and when I read about the world history, I would like to first mention that Africa wasn't the only continent that was colonized.
Yeah.
Right? Africa wasn't the first country that saw colonial masters.
Yeah.
At the point, the Catholic Church divided the world into two, sent Spain and Portugal to the Western world. Spain actually were the ones that how do you discover a country? But Columbus claimed he discovered America, right?
Exactly.
And so when I read about how much the Americans... Go on. You want to say something?
No, I want to say that the colonialism goes as far back as the Jewish and Roman Empire, where Rome colonized the Jews and so on. So it's even far back.
It's far back, right? So I am of this philosophy and ideology that we cannot blame the current problems of Africa to our colonial masters. Now, hold on. We know that the effects are possibly there. But when I see the advancement that China made, and I see the advancement that the Japanese made, even America, from when 1776, when they got their independence. And I know that we're kind of young, a lot of African countries are young and all. But I find it absurd, right, that even we knowing our history, we knowing that King Leopold has done these atrocities, we knowing the current problems Nigeria face due to what the British people did, right? And we knowing all this is our leaders still play one of the major roles in the destruction of Africa. You look at what's happening in Cameroon. Look at what's happening here in Nigeria when you talk about police brutality. So I just wanted to just butter that point that we had our own bad time in history. And let's get over it and let's fix this.
Yeah.
Let's fix this continent. So I would allow you to just continue.
So like,
yeah, go on. Yeah, hello, Louis. Can you hear me?
It's important to also state that Okay, so like I was saying earlier, like you mentioned China, you mentioned how far Chinese have come and so on. Like, so no matter how we might see Mao, who was the communist leader of China, no matter how we might view him, there was something which I believe he got right. Yeah. And that was the Cultural Revolution in China. Now, we might, what he did was to constantly reorientate the entire people from the colonial West to what they should become. And we can see how it has played off. Now, coming back to Africa, I've always said one thing regarding racism, regarding the overlooking and so on. And what I've said was that the African people have to actually fix Africa. If Africa is not fixed first, racism and so on will still continue. It will never cease. So if you have not fixed Africa, yeah, to the point where if something happens, people, blacks can say, okay, you know what, I'm returning. So that itself would help in bridging that, helping like whatever is needed.
Yeah.
So another thing is that when we talk about King Leopold, if Europe had a different opinion about him, yeah, it would have been difficult to influence them. And given they mostly made the educative curriculum or the education curriculum that particularly ruled the world then, all they did was just carry that curriculum and push to Africa. So if we want to hear more about King Leopold, because if you ask the basic Jew who Hitler is, the basic Jew will explain with A to Z about Hitler. We explain to you perfectly. And yet we see Africans who would generally not know who this man was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me just add a little to what you just said, right? So we can now move over to what's happening in Congo right now, so we don't spend so much time on history. Yeah. So when I did a study on American slavery, right, and how they enslaved the blacks, one of the greatest methods, greatest in the negative sense, is the white people in America then ensured that the black people couldn't read or write. And that was the only way we could hold them hostage. And even when they even brought religion, because religion keeps playing a role in this thing. I mean, and I find it absurd that it's always Christianity. So people,
mind you, it's really not only Christianity. We have Islam also playing a major part in it. In terms of we can have this conversation some other day, how they slowed down. Remember the eastern part of the world, they actually led, I don't know if you're up, they actually led the world then in philosophy.
Philosophy.
Yeah. So that's a difference. Yeah. And we know what the king, we know the king then did. So religion in itself, I won't necessarily blame, I'll call it organizational religion.
Yeah.
We saw what the Catholics did to So it's probably organizational.
It's organizational, right? But you see, one of the things that I figured out is this. The fact that they had a slave Bible, that wasn't necessary in America. They had a slave Bible and they had to remove important things like where they said, all people were created equally under God. They removed it. They now focused on Ephesians, where Paul was talking about masters and slaves. So, so if you see that it gets, that the tactics is the same, even till today, Louis. During that time, they won't allow you to have a book. How did they keep women away from power and them rising into society? Books, reading. That's always the same thing. Now, it is happening in this digital age. But what is happening this time is they're telling you what to read. That's why you see high censorship on Twitter. You see high censorship on Facebook. So they're tailoring your mind on what you think and how to react. So when you talk about the educational curriculum, it is very, very important. It is very, very, very important. And I'm surprised that we're not standing up to say excuse me. I mean, we're not. This is wrong. I just find it.
There are two things I've noticed that control the population. Yeah? Yeah, two things. If you control the media, you control everyone.
True.
If you control religion and ideology, yeah, you control everyone as well.
True.
So when we talk about even religion, I would actually blame those who were in that particular in that particular era where they could control. So it means even with the slave Bible and with everything, you could see control. And so even coming back to Africa, the way they have basically controlled Africa again is by Africa adopting the English curriculum.
Yeah.
Chinese never did that. Chinese developed their own curriculum, yeah, via the Cultural Revolution that happened and everything, where they banned religion and so on. They developed their own curriculum. And so we could see specifically what education does to the human mind. And to be honest, before Europeans entered Africa, Africans already had things like democracy, which was being practice in the eastern part of Nigeria. Africans were developed, were already purely developed. Africans had developed irrigation system, which we could see in the Nile region, Egypt, Sudan, and so on. And so there's a narrative that said, you know what, these people brought education to Africa. But I would disagree. And I'll say Africa actually had their own education and they actually were able to morph into what they needed to be morphed into. Yeah. They just needed the time to do what they needed to do.
I agree with you. And let me also say this. Most of our cultural advancement actually came from empirical observations.
Yeah.
Historical, passing down of historical information. Like, for example, when there was an epidemic or a pandemic, rather, of pox or smallpox. So when that was happening here in Nigeria at that particular point, people understood that if you had chickenpox before and you somehow survived it, you can't have it again.
Yeah.
So what they now started doing was, if you had it before, you can't have it again. You now become more like a doctor or a nurse. So they were able to come up with their own, even when they're able to come up with, okay, their leaves. They were able to, you know, make medicines out of
leaves. Definitely.
But I think we have actually digressed a whole lot, but again, we can't talk about DR Congo, but we can't talk about Nigeria. We're
talking about the overview of everything.
Of everything. So let's just go to what's happening, because we have just, let's say, the next 30 minutes, which we've done. Let's just go to what is happening in DR Congo today, what we call King Leopold's ghost.
So, firstly, I would like to actually state that till date, foreign countries still own virtually all of Congo's natural resources.
Agree.
Countries own virtually all of it. Now, a Congolese is 12 times more likely to die as a child in this present day. They have what you call 23 years life expectancy, which is one of the lowest in the entire world. Yeah. 99.24% of them are likely to make less money. They are likely to end up poor. 99.8% of them are likely to spend to earn less. Yeah. 83.32% of all of them are likely to contract HIV. That is what you could see.
I find all these statistics absurd. In a country that is worth $20 trillion of mineral resources,
yeah,
I find this very disturbing.
92% of them are likely to be poor. For a country with that much natural resource, 92% of them.
And what you know, the funny thing about what's going on, the president of DR Congo is a black man.
Yeah.
It's not so. I mean, while I want us to spend time, I don't think I want to say this, but why I want us to spend time on this whole issue. Why? I mean, what exactly is the biggest problem of the black man? I mean, when you look at the poorest country in the West,
yeah,
Haiti, the black country,
mm-hmm.
The poorest country in the world, a black country, the country that and the continent that has the poorest continent in the world, Africa, black. I mean, when you look at every single state that or mm-hmm. every single state that was colonized or that had colonial masters. Look at them. Look at that country when colonial masters were around and when they left. Nigeria was good. I mean, Nigeria was good I hate to say it, but we had a country to be proud of when the British were ruling us. We had a country to be proud of. Mm-hmm. We had wood. We had all these things. Look at Nigeria now. In just 60 years, they just gave a working country to black people. And just a minute. Now, look at this entire pattern and you see South Africa. One of the only African countries that their colonial masters didn't fully go out. They didn't fully leave. Mm-hmm. You can see that they was leading actually economically. And not that they are leading like the people themselves are leading. It's the white people in South Africa that are actually leading the economical and financial movement in South Africa. So the problem is, me and you, we have gone to school. We understand these things. We have high historic knowledge about these things. So why? Because we have very competent people in this country. We have very competent
people. Definitely.
So I find it very absurd. So I mean.
So, there are two points I would like to give regarding that. Yeah. The first point is the African culture itself is oppressive. Yeah. In sense that you could see it in every day. So for me as a governor or for me as a president, the logical thing to do if I'm 70 something years old is to step down. Yeah. As the president, I mean, ruling a country is not beans, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's to step down and then enjoy the money I've made.
Yeah.
But you see them not stepping down because one reason is that even after you have money, what you're looking for is power.
Yeah.
Holding on to that power. And you can see how it trickles down to power. So if for me to behold that power, I would likely sell out the next person instead of working with that person. You get my gist.
I actually understand your point. And I don't think this is an African problem. However, I'll tell you. And the reason
it might not be necessarily an African problem, but it is heightened times 12
in Africa.
In this part of the region. Yeah.
Yeah, because
that's what it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. It happens in China, it happens everywhere. But what I'm saying is that it is more heightened in terms of you want to oppress the next person so that you can be better.
So while that is true, what I find of when I look at the entire founding fathers of America, slave owners and all those people, I mean, I don't really like any of them, but when I see what they did in the Constitution, I respect them for that. They knew very well that, man naturally mm-hmm. likes
power. Man is selfish.
Selfish,
yeah, and it's very selfish.
So it is, even remove the whole African thing. Man is selfish. So the problem I think we have here is we're not able to check and balance these things. That's one. Two mm-hmm. is there is a knowledge problem in this country. Maybe in Nigeria, I can speak for Nigeria because I've did quite a lot of studies here. There is a knowledge problem. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at this, look at Nigeria today, you see that the northern part of this country are always in a precarious position. Whosoever comes into power, mm-hmm. they are more affected by that administration's policies. Right now, you see that they are the poorest of the people. They are the poorest regions in the country, right? And yet they have the farmland. They have, what I tell my friends is, when I see the north, I see gold, untouched gold.
See gold mine.
I see untouched gold. But you see, they don't know. The political leaders there have a siege over those people.
Mm-hmm.
If they know, if they're able to, because when I speak to, I have Northern friends, when I speak to them about this, they share the same grievances. So what I see here is, what I see what happened in the UK, for example, Winston Churchill wasn't really educated. If one was, I mean, he went to secondary, he went to primary school and secondary. He wasn't really a college graduate, but see what he did during the World War, right? So if you look at it again. It is, I think what we need to start passing down right now is not just go to school and learn what 1+1 is or what 2+2 is. You have to learn the ability to know, to project the consequences of your actions. Yes. So you see Buhari going to Brazil to borrow 1.2 billion naira for agriculture. And we're like, for what? So the problem I've seen is not, it's first, I tell you this, it's not an African problem. The whole people not wanting to step down. Because Hitler would have stepped down. There are a lot of, if not for what Martin Luther did, the Catholic Church definitely wanted to have the entire country, the entire world in their pockets, right? So I think we need to have checks and balances to these things. So, I mean, that's my own 2 cents on it.
Yeah, and I read 2 books that possibly shaped my ideology. The first one was Why Nations Fail. The second one was The State of Africa. At first, I was thinking, okay, for you to be successful, for a country to be successful, because I already done the whole analysis, and then I found out that, okay, it needed to be homogeneous. That was my ideology before. Like, you look at what Japan did, you look at what European countries, you look at what Norway did, just based on the fact that they were homogeneous. And then coming to Africa, I analyzed and I was like, okay, you know what? If probably these guys divided Africa based on culture, based on religion, based on tradition, we might have had a better chance to, But then, which, of course, there's a slight like points to that, but I said this, I said thinking, and then it's not really homogeneity that works there.
That's what I wanted to tell you, because if you look at India, India is not,
It's not really homogeneous. But even though I won't categorize India as third world, but they've come developed further. Yeah. So look at US. US is not homogeneous. Practically, it's not. Not at all.
And if you notice what happened to US now, it's not US is not homogeneous as regards to culture, as in. In the holistic level, but if what is happening right now, there is a different kind of culture that is happening, and you can see that's why there is so much divide in the US. There's so much divide to the point that, I mean, left, right is like saying, so before left and right, the whole concept of left and right is left and right is political. This guy ran for the Republican Party. This guy ran for the Democratic Party. But now it is so bad that if you're left, I mean, this comes from the left most of the time. They don't even know how to relate with the right. It's like the dichotomy. You know,
once you're bipartisan, it's difficult for you to relate to the other person.
Exactly. So the bipartisanship is for me a new form of a new form of culture, or a new form of heterogeneous culture. So I mean, it's ridiculous. I will tell you.
Even giving my last point here, I would like us to know that it is important for people to not just suck in information that is presented to them. We also have a point as young people growing, as probably future leaders and so on. So I actually go back in history and actually read through specific events that faced history it doesn't need to be in our curriculum. We don't have to study it in school and so on. Mm-hmm. But if we can actually go back and look at this, not just about reading it, about giving, sitting back and reflecting, not just reflecting as Africans, reflecting from a neutral standpoint. Okay, yeah. this happened. You can't blame this, you can't blame that. Yeah. No form of, like, just from neutral, just investigate and then look holistically. I think we would actually be a more stronger generation coming out.
Yeah. So you see, one of the things that I also want to say is, just in my own closing point to everybody that is listening.
Yeah.
We cannot give you every information, right? We can't give you every information about the guy called Kim Leopold. We can't give you every information about what's happening in Cameroon or what happened in Ethiopia. But what I want to also tell you is, when you go back and read history, King Leopold, Hitler, ask yourself this question. This is what helps me. And this is my final point, and I believe this is our closing point. What will you have done?
Mm-hmm.
You played a pivotal role in that time. Because what people don't understand is, we can sit back and criticize a lot of people. We can sit back and say, oh, why is Buhari not doing this? Oh, why is Buhari not? And while that is good, right? Constructive criticism is good. We need to also sit back and look, what would I have done? Because again, who would tell you? I mean, when I read the Treaty of Versailles, Treaty of Versailles was so harmful to the Germans.
Yeah.
Tell you the gospel truth. It was so harmful to the Germans. Someone had to come out and speak up for the Germans. Someone had to come up and say, see, this Treaty of Versailles is ridiculous. But I mean, Hitler came up to speak up and had other ulterior motives, and then the whole World War and Holocaust.
He carried it.
So, what I've also seen again, Lewis, is when I see men who have achieved so much in their life and see how the turn almost immediately, it amazes me. I'll give you an example. Martin Luther King, Jesuit priest. Yeah. Martin Luther. Jesuit priest, intelligent man. Yeah. This was man who headed the Reformation. He did 96 theses on the doors of the cathedral of the Catholic Church, telling them that salvation is only by faith and faith alone. And suddenly he becomes anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you go from being spearheading Reformation to become anti-Semitic? The same thing, look at King Henry VIII. King Henry VIII was given the title defender of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly he wants to divorce his wife. And because of the Catholic, the Pope doesn't allow, he creates a new church. Just create a new church. And then divorces his wife and beheads his wife. And you're like, how do you go from defender of the faith to... You get to that? So the point is, you need to, when we read history, let's always ask ourselves these questions. What will you do when it helps us?
Yeah.
Lewis, I would allow you to give your closing point. Anything you think is important for our audience to know, anything you think, as in even outside the whole anything you think is important, you have the minute to do that.
Okay, so just quickly, reading is important. You have to read history. If you see what happened with even Martin Luther, you realize that for him to have gone through those various stages, for him to have switched from the quiet priest to someone that actually nailed thesis to the door, you saw he read. He didn't just, even in Christianity, you don't just assimilate, you don't just take in. You have to probe. Consequentialism is very important. When you receive information, consequentialism. I've started doing something where I sit back and then I actually put myself in the other person's shoes. And why did the person do this? Why are they doing this? And then make a case for the person. It helps. And so, people as well. There is also a reconciliation in ideology and ideas. People's experiences trigger that kind of reconciliation. And so whatever idea you receive or whatever you assimilate, it is going to actually trigger a reconciliation of your idea. So that's where I would like to stop.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lewis. I appreciate you for coming here and speaking on this whole topic. So to my audience live and to the ones who are listening on the podcast, I want to thank you very much for coming to the end of this show. And and I just also want to thank you for continuing listening. Please subscribe. And most importantly, next week, we're going to be talking about something, one of the very pivotal topics, which is the Second Amendment and why we need it in this country. So thank you once again. I hope you have a beautiful week ahead and remain blessed. Bye.
You too. Bye.